Good morning, everyone. I'll call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order. Today is March 24th, 2022. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. Mr. Brinks, can you take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Present.
Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson present.
Carlson is present. Representative Nash.
Present.
Nash is present. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Bonner is present. Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Drazkowski is present. Representative Elkins. I just admitted him. Representative Elkins. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Greenman is present. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne present.
Cleburne is present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick is present. Representative Mason. Representative New Brindley.
Present.
New Brindley is present. Representative Pawlowski is excused. Representative Plum.
Present.
Plum is present. Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Elkins is present. Representative Mason. Chair, with that, we have a quorum.
Mason present.
Mason is present.
We have a quorum. Thank you, Mr. Brinks. Next item is the approval of the minutes from our last meeting, March 22nd. Representative Carlson, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just had a chance to look at the minutes and would move their approval.
Motions have been made to approve the minutes for March 22nd, 2022. Everybody wants to unmute. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. Members, we've got four bills up today, and I think the one bill might take a little bit of time, and so we plan for coming back tonight after session if we don't get done this morning, just in for people's notes, if we do come back a half hour after the end of session, use the same Zoom link that you used this morning to get in. And we're going to do Patty Akins, Representative Akins' bill 3084, right? First thing when we come back in the evening. And so with that, members, the first bill we have on our agenda this morning is House File 4036, Representative Cleburne. And Representative Cleburne, you want to make your motion. Relay this over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the committee lay over House File 4036 for possible inclusion in the committee's finance bill.
And relaying this over because it has it just says it's not completed fiscal note, but I think we got the fiscal note late last night.
We did receive the fiscal note last night, but I'll address that in the comments as I go forward. Right?
Sounds good. So, Representative Cleburne, if you want to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Today I'm bringing forward House File 4036 for possible inclusion in the committee's bill. This bill establishes a task force to examine the aging demographic in Minnesota and conditions that would necessitate the creation of a Department of Aging within the executive branch to promote healthy aging in Minnesota and ensure that all aging-related policies are inclusive of Minnesotans, regardless of race, ethnicity, culture, geographic, sexual orientation, abilities, or other characteristics to reflect the full population of the state of Minnesota. In your packets today and posted online for the public, you will find letters of support from the Minnesota Council on Disabilities and the Minnesota Association of Area Agencies on Aging, as well as letters of support from the chair and other members of the Minnesota Board of Aging. You will also find a State Demographer's 2022 report on Minnesota's aging population and disability communities. In reviewing the demographer's report, we can see a greater impact of aging in Greater Minnesota. And Greater Minnesota is facing unique challenges in meeting the needs of our aging populations and the changing economies, including maintenance and development of transportation and other infrastructure needs, access to broadband, and shifts in traditional industries, and stagnant or declining working age populations. Long-term, Minnesota will see a significant shift in healthcare costs and social services. Minnesota needs to begin thinking about these issues and how it will address them before the issues become acute. After reviewing the fiscal note that we received last night, I acknowledge there are still opportunities to improve this legislation, and I'm asking members on both sides of our table to work with me to improve this bill. The issues are critical to our state. With me today, Mr. Chair, are testifiers who can speak to the importance of this bill, and I ask you to recognize them at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. The first person on my list is Dr. Joseph Gangler. I hope I said that properly.
Not quite, but you're close. So, thank you.
Give your name and state your name, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Gogler. I am a professor here in the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota. I also direct what's called our Center for Healthy Aging and Innovation, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of this bill. As you heard from some of the prior comments, we really are in an unprecedented demographic shift with the age of the Minnesota population. There are more older people in Minnesota now than there ever have been before. And really, I would argue this is felt in all aspects of our communities. And, you know, I think it's important to note, and this is certainly how I think about it, I think many gerontologists, geriatricians do as well, is, you know, clearly this major demographic shift does pose a number of challenges, whether it relates to work and the workforce, to caregiving, the age-friendliness of our neighborhoods and housing, as well as the effective delivery of healthcare to older people and their families. And it's important also to emphasize much of that care is provided by families to older people in need in Minnesota and elsewhere. However, this demographic shift is also a major accomplishment in many ways. It's a triumph of public health and medicine. We often view the aging of a population from this deficit lens, that it's a crisis, it's a quote-unquote tsunami, when in fact, I also think it's a remarkable opportunity. It's an opportunity for our state to leverage this incredible resource of citizens to further advance what many of us would call the potential age friendliness of our state. So the Center for Healthy Aging and Innovation at the University of Minnesota stands ready. We are very excited to support this potential legislative task force on aging. And in the end, this opportunity to effectively integrate and align a number of age-relevant initiatives across multiple departments and units to really achieve the ultimate goal, which I would argue is true age friendliness of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Doctor. Next person we have is Kathleen Kelso. If you want to identify yourself for the tape and then proceed with your testimony. You're muted, ma'am.
Thank you. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Kathleen Kelso. I'm an appointed member of the Minnesota Board on Aging. Minnesota statute directs the Minnesota Board on Aging to advise the governor and legislature on policies and planning for our aging population. In accordance with the statute, the Board on Aging proposes House File 4036 and seeks committee approval for a legislative task force to examine the necessity for a Department on Aging. This year, the state demographer has projected that as of next year, 2023, Minnesota will reach 1 million people over the age of 65. In the next 8 years, 300,000 Minnesotans will be over the age of 75. Today, the highest percentage of aging adults live in Greater Minnesota. Rural counties experience aging earlier and more acutely than the metro area. In 15 counties today, the percentage of older adults already ranks from 23 to 32% of their population. Where and how will we live and stay active as we age and choose to remain in our own communities? This demographic shift is upon us today. It presents opportunities and challenges for legislative task force members who will consider the financial security, housing, transportation, healthcare, employment, and social service needs of our aging population. Will there be safe housing that is affordable for older Minnesotans able to live independently? Will there be a transit system that will meet the demand? Will there be access to rural health care, support systems, jobs? The list goes on. You have before you the rationale for this bill, which I summarize. A legislative task force is a first step toward the multi-decade planning and implementation that would be measurable and accountable to Minnesotans, possibly through a Department on Aging. A legislative task force will address critical questions about the necessity for a built infrastructure for aging. A legislative task force is necessary because we require a statewide Minnesota plan for aging that will drive fundamental change in how we support Minnesota families and healthy aging. To be successful, Minnesota communities must reach scale with every system that supports community life. The Minnesota Board on Aging is convinced that the formation of this legislative task force is the best step we as a state can take to serve current and future elders and their families in Minnesota. Please support House File 4036. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Kelso. Questions, members? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. Question for you. We just heard from the Board on Aging, if you do this task force, would there then, I guess, follow that the Board on Aging would be stood down, or is this in addition to? And thanks.
Representative Klingberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. I would actually like Ms. Kelso to answer the question for you, please.
Sure. Ms. Kelso.
Thank you, Representative Nash. The Board on Aging did not make a decision regarding that activity. We assume that a legislative task force would examine the statute that now exists in light of what might be a Department on Aging or another entity that has the level of authority that we are looking for in the cabinet, something that is has a seat at the table and has a direct line to the governor. The Board on Aging at this point in time has 8 simple duties, most of which are planning, and however, the Board on Aging doesn't have the capacity or the staff, and we are volunteers appointed by the governor with terms of 4 years. We do not have the capacity as we now exist to do this level of activity.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question really was to the author and Representative Claiborne. We just heard that the board doesn't have the capacity to do this. I think they are receiving some staff. What is the fiscal cost of the Board on Aging? And if you have a task force, obviously you'll have costs there, so that may be duplicative. Is it your intention as the author to stand down the Board on Aging?
Representative Claiborne.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash, I would like to see the report that comes out of this task force, and then that decision can be made at that time. I personally do not have the information necessary to truly make that determination at this time. But I do appreciate the question, and I would be happy to take your positive suggestions to make this bill better, or the recommendations that you and your community may have as well. Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Nothing further.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Claiborne, I appreciate the intent and working with our a senior population and the different concerns that arise. I would just say a little bit of same ideas as Representative Nash had, but I would also add that, you know, specifically in one of the areas that I work a lot in transportation, we address and take a look at a lot of these issues when we talk about transit, especially in outstate Minnesota, greater Minnesota. And while your intent might be great, I just don't understand why we have a board. You want to create a task force to grow government more and more, and it's just phenomenal that we keep doing this, no matter what the intention is. I think the task, the board that we currently have should address these issues. There's 134 state representatives that should be aware of their communities and what their needs are. And we can't just keep growing and growing government. And you wonder why we fight for more. We fight against more tax increases while everybody else across the aisle wants to continue to increase taxes and fees so that we can grow government and make people more dependent on government. That's simply going the wrong direction that constituents want. And so I would strongly oppose this bill, not for the intent, but certainly because of the growth of government that just seems to be out of control across the aisle.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm thinking this probably goes back to the time when Pawlenty was governor. There was a major survey done about just getting long-term care for adults at that point in time. And while the bill was passed, I don't remember anything ever coming of that. So we know that our seniors, many do not have long-term care. So that's a major issue alone that needs to be addressed. And the fact that if we had a program, the way I was reading, I think it was California, where it's a process. It's not you just get to be a certain age and you're involved. That's really important because I remember when my mother was alive, she was in another state, and we were very fortunate that we had neighbors that were there to take care of her for as long as she could live by herself. But other people are not that fortunate, and as the commenter said, especially in the rural area, that is getting to be a severe problem. So to me, it sounds at least we need to at least look into this to make sure that we can provide safely for our people as they age. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Any further questions or comments? Mr. Gagler.
Yes, it's Dr. Gaw, or Mr.
Gaw. Yes, I
know. Is actually best. Let's do that's fine, too. You know, one thing I really am grateful for these comments and the input from the different members of the committee. I can only speak to what I see and view as how aging is treated and addressed in this state from my vantage point. And I think the comment made earlier was absolutely correct. There are many divisions and offices that are dealing with aging communities effectively within their focus. But the issue to me is, and we know this when we think of quality care, quality services for older people, the name of the game is integration. I never really saw this task force necessarily as creating yet another bureaucratic entity related to aging. Instead, what I think this task force can lead to, and probably would be something I'd be looking for, is a way to break down what I see as existing silos within the government where there's not good integration or coordination. And when we're talking about aging, we're talking about the health of their communities, that coordination is necessary and essential. So when you look at the Department of Health, the Minnesota Board on Aging, some of these other entities, they all are doing important work within their silos, but are they communicating effectively across those silos? If there isn't good effective communication across those silos, we will not address the challenges of an aging community. I believe that can be done efficiently, and it can be done through this legislative task force. And I don't think it's necessarily something that's going to add a great deal of cost or burden to taxpayers. Instead, what it will create is the opportunity to learn and share from each of these relevant units and really build and bolster existing services.
Thank you, Mr. Yes, thank you, Dr. Representative Claiborne, if you want to wrap up, and we can then get this latest over.
Thank you very much, committee members and Chair. I appreciate your consideration of House File 4036. It is, in my mind, the same as what Dr. Gagler just said. It is about making sure that there is integration. We are not duplicating services, but we are knowledgeable about where the services are and how they can best serve our communities. It is really critical that we work together to address the needs of our aging population. And when addressing the needs of our aging population, we are also addressing the concerns and future needs and costs of our younger population. So this is a win-win for both our economy as a whole and our aging population. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for your consideration today. And I ask the bill, I renew my motion that House File 4036 be laid over for possible inclusion.
With that, members, this bill is laid over, and hopefully we can work out some of the kinks before we put it into an omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair, they're not kinks. They're opportunities for improvement. Thank you.
Thank you. The next bill we have on the agenda is House File 4293. And members, this is just a simple technical bill. It is the bill that we're going to be using going forward as our vehicle for our omnibus bill. And it just makes a couple of technical changes. And Ms. Freeman is here from the Secretary of State's office to explain that. And then we're going to lay off. I'll move the bill to have it in front of us, but we're going to lay this over again for the use as our vehicle. Representative or Ms. Coleman, Ms. Freeman, I mean.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Nicole Freeman from the Office of Secretary of State. Yes, this bill updates language around signature envelopes and secrecy envelopes used in the absentee ballot process. There are other updates like this that already appear in statute, and so this is just a few more of those examples that needed to be updated.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman. Any questions, members? If not, we'll lay this over. Representative Kosnick.
Sorry, I couldn't get my... my mic open there.
That's why I go slow and ask it multiple times. Representative Kosnick.
Thanks. Just a clarifying question to the department or secretary's office. Does this particular bill address mobile voting locations?
Representative or Ms. Freeman, I believe the answer to that is no, but I'll let her answer. In fact, I know the answer is no, but Ms. Freeman.
Yeah, nope. This just includes this bill just includes language changes to update the terminology used around absentee ballot envelopes.
Okay,
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's the envelope and the ballot envelopes is what it addresses.
Okay, I was just curious if there was some questions regarding mobile voting. I was wondering if the department or the secretary's office. Has any comments on maybe that should be included in here to clarify, are those mobile voting locations, are those in statute currently, or is that, I kind of thought that there was need for some clarity on that. Could you comment on that?
Ms. Freeman and Representative Kosnick, because this is a type of bill we set up for a vehicle, then we add our other stuff to it. But for right now, this only talks about the envelopes. The two envelopes that are parted in, it's lining them with up with the way they're discussed and talked about it in the public with people. But Ms. Freeman.
Sure. The Secretary of the State Office didn't write this bill. And so again, like the chair said, it is just a few language changes and updates to the language relating to envelopes used throughout the absentee ballot process.
Fair enough. I'll leave it at that. I was looking for a little more clarification on the mobile voting. The Secretary's office had a position on the language currently around that, but we can get into that later.
Any other questions of either the author or of the Secretary's office? If not, we'll lay this bill over, and you'll see this number come back, and when we load it up with the stuff that we're going to move forward. Members, the next bill we have on our agenda is House File 4310, and this is a little more substantive than the last one. And so I'm going to hand the gavel over to Representative Carlson, and we'll go from there. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Would you like to move your bill, House File 4310?
Again, I'll move House File 4310. This is the, and it's the intent is we're going to lay this over also. The 4310 is the technical bill that was brought forward by the Secretary of State. This is basically all the stuff that was in last year's bill that came out of our committee, with all the stuff that was removed from that bill last year to at the behest of the minority members of the caucus. This is the bill that we moved forward out of committee last year, went to conference. These are the things that in conference did not get included. And again, it's just technical changes in language, and that's what the bill does. And I'll have Ms. Freeman, if you will, she can walk us through the bill and explain the provisions of the bill and what they are.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair Nelson. Ms. Freeman, we'll go to your testimony, and then we have 8 amendments then that we'll address afterwards. Ms. Freeman, if you can introduce yourself for the record, and please proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Nelson. My name is Nicole Freeman, Office of Secretary of State, Government Relations Director. I'm just going to do a section-by-section walkthrough. We'll move quickly, and yes, once we get through amendments, we can answer more questions to the substance of the bill. So Section 1 clarifies and codifies the way that a safe and home participant currently receives an absentee ballot, so just putting that in statute. Section 2 adds residential treatment and adult foster care programs to the type of residential facilities that will need to share lists with the county auditor to facilitate Election Day registration. And next, there's a long list of sections, starting in Section 3, that do all the same thing. And so Sections 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 16, 17, 18, 21, 22, 24, 31, 33, 35, 37, 38, all provide a terminology update to refer to the place where a voter maintains or maintained residence rather than where a voter resides or resided. This matches terminology that is in other portions of statute. And so this is just an attempt to streamline and match up that language. Section 4 updates and arranges language to clarify that a voter registration application would not be considered deficient for lack of an identification number if the voter was not issued a number, and also if the information can be verified using another database with the applicant's name and date of birth. Section 11 defines the term utility worker for the purpose of the state's absentee voting laws. And the definition is used in Section 12. And so Section 12 authorizes a trained or certified emergency response provider, which is also a utility worker, to vote by absentee ballot or use the UACAVA process if they're deployed during the absentee voting period or on Election Day. They would be deployed in a state of emergency sort of situation. So thinking about like forest fires and power outages across the country and those utility workers being sent away from home to do that work. Section 13 and 14 reorganize language related to the designation of in-person absentee ballot locations. The requirements for the in-person ballot locations remain the same. There's just some reorganization of that language. Section 15 permits local election officials to engage in absentee voting activities in state veterans' homes, as well as in certain shelters for battered women. And they would use the same process as permitted in hospitals or other healthcare facilities. Section 19 would clarify that existing law establishing a procedure for filling a vacancy in nomination for an office only applies to local and state candidates and not for a federal office. Section 20 modifies standards for when a local government needs to adopt an ordinance or resolution designating a polling place. So rather than requiring an ordinance designating polling places every year, a local government would only be required to adopt this ordinance by December 31st, if a polling place has changed. Section 23 authorizes the option of mail balloting for all towns and all cities with fewer than 400 registered voters, and this is regardless of their geographic location within the state. Section 25 authorizes a mail ballot election to include both a special election question as well as candidates for office if there are overlapping municipal and school district jurisdictions, and one of those jurisdictions has a question on the ballot. Current law prohibits offices from appearing on a special mail-only ballot election, and so this is just to sort of say that if these elections are happening at the same time, a mail ballot process could be used. Section 26 eliminates the three-person limit on the number of voters that a person can assist on election day. The limit was subject to a consent decree as well as an order from the Supreme Court in 2020. Section 27 provides an explicit requirement that the State Canvassing Board declare the election of candidates for the state and federal offices after the canvass is complete. And the language mirrors the requirements in subdivision 2, I believe, that instructs county canvassing boards to do so as well. Sections 29 and 30 extend a period for conducting a special election to fill a vacant legislative seat. It extends that period by 2 weeks. In cases where this expedited process is required in order to allow the person elected to be seated quickly for a legislative session. So it's extending that period out, which allows for the administration of absentee balloting to go more smoothly, as well as just the other mechanics of the election with ballot printing to work better. Section 34 clarifies that voters voting under the Safe at Home program must be permitted to cast a ballot using the procedures around the presidential nomination primary. And finally, Section 36 narrows the prohibition on campaigning near a polling place on election day so that it only applies during voting hours. And that is the bill.
That's the bill, members.
Well, thank you, Ms. Freeman.
Thank you, Representative Carl, or Chair Carlson. I forgot where I'm at.
And Ms. Freeman was our only testifier, so we can proceed with amendments. First amendment before us, one second here. Is the A2 amendment. Representative Kosnick, if you would like to move your amendment and then please describe it.
Mr. Chair, I would move the H4310A2 amendment.
Okay. And then please proceed with your description.
Well, one of the basic premises of democracy and role of government is to provide fair and free elections. So private contributions that are being used for election costs, I think many would agree, cast a shadow of undue influence on our elections and questions the integrity of our elections. And then as members of this committee, I think we all should agree that the integrity of our elections has been called into question in the recent elections, and we should be moving forward to instill confidence to our voters and the constituents that we have safe and secure elections. And so having private contributions questions the impartiality of elections, and impartiality, I think, is essential to the basic tenet of democracy. So what this amendment would do is just clarify that for-profit or nonprofit groups providing contributions for the election process are not permitted. It should be the role of the state to provide for our election systems. And so I would ask the committee to accept this amendment. And I think it's an important, very important process to make sure that we don't have outside influence, undue influence in our elections by anytime there's somebody gives a gift in a lot of city or school board, there's school districts, the boards have to approve the acceptance of those gifts. And I always thought that was kind of strange when I first started paying attention. But the reason is the board needs to understand why the gift is being made. And in Lakeville, we just built a really nice swimming pool, and there was private donations made. One of them was a very significant, a very generous donor. But that couldn't just automatically accept that large donation. The school board looked at it, and the person giving the donation asked for naming rights, and that was fine, according, you know, for that particular project. But in our elections, we can't question people's or assume people's intentions for providing contributions are nonpartisan. And I think it's important to have nonpartisan elections. And when we accept outside contributions, it makes it calls that into question in the integrity of the election. So I hope the committee, I'll stand for any questions, but that's what the amendment does, is it instills the integrity of our elections and keeps undue influences out of our election systems.
Questions to the author on the A2 amendment? Member questions to the A2 amendment? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go to a vote. All those in favor?
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
I'd like to comment on the amendment.
Oh, members. I'm sorry.
I know we, members, this bill, like I said in my opening remarks, is a technical bill. It has technical amendments, that technical tweaks to the our laws that, and again, these are all technical things that we passed out of this committee last year, passed off the floor last year. There's nothing new in here that wasn't in the bill last year that, again, we passed out of our committee. And so this is a major change. It's not a technical change. This is a very major change. And so, members, I would ask you to vote no on this amendment.
Further, thank you, Chair Nelson. Further discussion to the A2 amendment. Representative Kosnick, thank you. Why don't you have some closing remarks, and we'll go to a vote.
Thank you, members. And Chair Nelson, I appreciate that you want this to be a technical bill, but nonetheless, it does affect our elections. Whether you consider this a technical amendment or not, instilling integrity in our elections is essential, whether it's technical or a policy deviation. I think this is a critical policy that says you can't pay to influence our election systems. If people want to support candidates in a partisan manner, we have systems set up for that. But outside contributions in our election systems should not be tolerated. It's not a It opens up, this amendment is critically important and should be included to instill the integrity of our elections. It's pretty basic, really, that outside influences can't be providing large amounts of money or gifts to influence our elections. It's that simple. And whether you think it's technical or not, I think it's paramount to instilling integrity in our elections. Voting against it, I think you're saying that you want outside influences, nonpartisan groups to influence our elections. And I don't think constituents want that. I think it's horrible for democracy. And I would urge our members to accept this amendment.
Representative New Brindley, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to request a roll call on the amendment.
Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Further member questions? Okay, we'll go to a vote. Will the clerk please take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson?
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson?
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash?
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins?
Aye. Elkins, no.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman?
No.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleavorn?
Cleavorn, no.
Cleavorn votes nay. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason?
Mason, no.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley?
Yes.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pawlowski is excused. Representative Quam. Representative Quam is excused. Chair, with a vote of 4 ayes and 7 nays, the motion does not prevail.
Chair, with 4 ayes and 7 noes, the A2 amendment does not prevail. The next amendment we have before us is also a Koznick amendment. Representative Koznick, the A3, if you want to move the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I do move the A3 amendment.
Great.
Over to that please, page.
Please proceed with your description once you get your papers.
The A3 amendment clarifies where polling locations will be, somewhat straightforward, and then that open in-person voting would be included for the entire absentee voting period during the same days and hours as the Office of the County Auditor is open for absentee voting. So it kind of goes to my previous question to the Secretary of State's office. There is some language added into the bill for voting. So I guess I'll leave it for that and see if there's any questions, but it prohibits pop-up voting. I don't think it's consistent. If there's random counties are having mobile voting locations that not all voters may be aware of, we should have standard classified or predetermined locations. It's consistent with what we do most of the state. This clarifies, and I think it was in question whether or not mobile voting locations are allowed. So this would just clarify and make it consistent across the state, which I think is more fair to all voters.
Okay, questions to the A3. Chair Nelson, I see you have your hand up. Chair Nelson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Koznick, I guess the way I read your amendment, that the only place that they could have in-person absentee or drop-off, it would be a permanent polling place. And I know my city, Brooklyn Park, they have the early voting and the drop-off for the absentee ballots at City Hall during that period. They don't have it in a polling place. And a lot of the polling places in my legislative district in Brooklyn Park are either in churches or in schools. And so if I read this the way I understand it, that would mean that they'd have to set up whatever they're going to designate as their permanent absentee drop-off place would have to be in one of those polling places. So in a school for the 40-plus days before the election, for a church, those same period before an election, they would have to be open to allow people to drop off that absentee ballot if that's where they did. That was the only designated place they had in the city. And I guess that's how you read this amendment. Is that what you're getting at? I know the proportion in the bill that talks about increasing, it's adding assisted living, it's adding veterans homes, the places where election workers can go in and deliver absentee ballots to people that are bound there and can't get out. But it doesn't deal with this piece of it that you talked about. So can you explain that to me and give me some clarification?
Representative Koznick.
Thank you. Chair Nelson, for the any early voting would be consistent with predetermined polling places. So it doesn't have to be all of your voting locations and schools and churches that you mentioned in Lakeville. And I think in most places, your city hall might be the designated place, and it would just be predetermined as one of the polling places rather than, a grocery store parking lot or any place that's not currently or predetermined according to statute as a polling location.
Chair Nelson, any follow-up?
I'm just going to say that, this is a major change in how we're doing voting. This is a technical bill. And with that, members, I would urge a no vote on it because this is purely a technical bill, technical changes, tweaks in language. make it consistent with the statute. So I would urge members to vote no on this amendment. Representative Nash, I see you had your hand up next.
Yes, Mr. Chair, request a roll call.
Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Koznick, for the amendment. The question I have is, would this help solve the problem of having drop boxes that are not staffed and people dropping off absentee ballots to them? And if not, I think we want to do that too.
Okay, Representative Koznick.
I was reading an email here. Yes, Representative Drazkowski, that is the intent, if I understood your question correctly.
Representative Drazkowski, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if this amendment solves that, I think we all need to vote for it. This problem we have where people are able to drop off absentee ballots and there is no one there to check on them and check their identity and check how many ballots they're carrying, et cetera, because we had that last election all over the state. And if that is not solved, we're not doing our job here. That's more important than anything else in the bill in terms of election integrity. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Koznick.
Okay. Seeing no further member questions, a roll call having been requested, we will take the roll. Will the clerk please proceed with taking the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Drazkowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
No.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, no.
Cleburne votes nay. Representative Koznick.
Aye.
Koznick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, no.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pawlowski is excused. Representative Quam is excused as well. Chair with a vote of 4 ayes, 7 nays, and 2 excused, the motion does not prevail.
Thank you. With 4 ayes and 7 noes, the A3 amendment is not adopted. Members, the next amendment I have on my list here is the A4. Representative New Brindley, if you would please move your amendment and then describe it for us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A4 is a relatively simple amendment. It is just stating that the eligibility requirements already laid out in the bill apply to all federal, state, and local elections conducted in the state, and that those cannot be modified by local municipalities. So it's just stating that the election law and the eligibility requirements need to be applied the same throughout the state.
Member questions? Chair Nelson. Mr. Chair and members, this is currently our state constitution. It is in our state constitution, so therefore it applies to all elections that are held within our state. Non-citizens are not able to vote. Again, that's in our state constitution. And this is unnecessary. I don't know other places where we take out parts of our state constitution and put it in statutes. There may be some, but I don't. And this is already the law of the state of Minnesota because it's our constitution, which is the most supreme law. It trumps any statutes that we have. So members, I would urge a no vote on this. Again, this is a major substantive change to the language in the election portion of our statutes. And this is just a technical bill to try and clean up some minor inconsistencies in our election statutes.
Thank you. Representative Nash, I see you got your hand up as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to make sure we put a roll call on this as well. And, you know, sometimes, as is said here in the legislature, we like to go a little belt and suspenders, and I would say that this is exactly that effort.
Okay. A roll call having been requested.
Representative Kosnick, I see you waving your hand there. You got a comment for us? Question?
I do. My virtual hand was up as well, but I was okay. Hard to see in the light of my background there. Representative Brindley, I was looking at this as well and had a question similar to pertinent to your amendment on page 11, subdivision 1. It talks about eligible voters, and there was recently some discussion about in section 10. It talks about eligible voters to be eligible vote next. Not that section. There was a section in there about caucuses and to be a delegate in that, and there was some recent comment. That's not the right section. I don't have that in front of me exactly. But that you needed to be a citizen to participate. You could go to caucuses, but in order to be a delegate to either of the caucuses, you needed to be a U.S. citizen. Does your amendment address that or not?
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kosnick, for the question. And honestly, I would have to look into that further. This only because the section that you're referencing regarding caucuses, I don't know where that falls within the law. This my amendment is addressing specifically 5B06, where it's discussing voter eligibility. It's not changing any law. This amendment is not making any changes to law. It is simply clarifying that local municipalities cannot modify this law. Obviously, we all know that there are things in statute. Some things are preemptive. They preempt local changes and modifications to local statute, and other things do not. And local municipalities can modify what they do in their local municipalities. This is ensuring that that this preempts local modification to eligibility requirements for voters. So it's not actually making any changes. But to your question, Representative Kosnick, regarding caucuses and illegal voters, I wasn't thinking about that necessarily. And so I did not check to see where that falls within statute. But certainly it should be subject to the same thing.
Okay. Representative Kosnick, any follow-up on that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. It is in section 10 on page 11 at the top about eligible voters. An eligible voter may vote or be elected a delegate or officer only in the precinct where they reside. But talking to eligibility that your amendment speaks to, I think brings to light what was talked about in the press a little bit more recently. I think new Americans should be participating in our democracy, in our caucus system, in our local parties. But I think it's also important that as we do that, especially in a political sense, that we follow the state law. And your amendment, thank you for bringing it, because I think it raises the question, whether intentionally or not, that citizens should be participating in or holding offices in our caucus system. If non-citizens are holding those offices, that's actually against our statutes right now. And I thank you for clarifying that with your amendment, that it should be eligible voters participating. So thank you, even if that wasn't your intention. But I think it should be important to look at, with the recent news reports, our delegates to our caucus system, actual eligible voters.
Okay, seeing no further discussion on the A4 New Brindley amendment. A roll call having been requested, Mr. Brinks, will you please take—
Mr. Chair, can I make closing comments?
Sure, I'm sorry, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just reiterate that this is not actually making any changes. This would be technical language. It's not making any changes to the requirements. It is simply ensuring that that local municipalities do not modify our election law by ordinance. And I would just add that there is some precedent for this, and this is timely. We saw in New York City that the local government in New York City modified their election law contrary to state election law. We have also seen movement here in Minneapolis by a city councilman to consider changing local election law that would make it contrary to state election law. So this is timely, and while it doesn't make a change to eligibility, it clarifies that this is an important function of the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Brinks, if you could please proceed with the roll call.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Drazdowski.
Aye.
Drazdowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes no.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
No.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, no.
Cleburne votes nay. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, no.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Yes.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pawlowski is excused. Representative Quam is excused. Chair, with a vote of 4 ayes, 7 nays, and 2 excused, the motion does not prevail.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brinks. With a vote of 4 ayes, 7 nays, the A4 amendment does not prevail. The next two amendments are Representative Nash amendments, the A6 and the A7. Representative Nash, if you would please move the A6 and proceed with your description.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A6 and request a roll call.
Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the A6 amendment would go to prevent address any future voter fraud that may be uncovered during the course of an election. It is completely all about election integrity and making sure that if in the future voter fraud is found, that we punish it and we make sure that we don't allow it to happen. We all understand, believe, and feel strongly about election integrity. And the amendment seeks to make sure that if it is uncovered, that we punish that and that we take preventive steps to make sure that we are making sure that it cannot happen. So in the language of the amendment, there are things that would be done in advance of voting to prevent fraud and then after the fact to how to address it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, member questions, comments to the A6 amendment. Chair Nelson.
I'll go last if there's anybody else.
Okay. Well, why don't you go ahead, Chair Nelson, then we'll go back to Representative Nash for closing comments.
Members, again, this is a technical bill. There's some major policy changes here in this. Even though it's codifying what the current rule is on delivery of absentee ballots, it's codified, but there's changes of adding felonies in two places in the bill here, and so therefore that's a major change. That so I would say that I would urge a no vote on this. Again, this is a technical bill, purely technical bill, of the stuff that we passed last year. And passed off our floor last year. So, members, I would say please vote no on this amendment.
Okay, back to you, Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I certainly understand that the bill is considered technical, but I think so is preventing voter fraud. I think that we don't want that to happen. We are very interested in making sure that that does not happen. This is, as I said, a preventative measure. And it should not be considered anything beyond technical. We want to make sure that we are clarifying and codifying what constitutes voter fraud. And if you are interested in preventing that, and I believe that you'll be voting yes on this amendment and would renew the adoption of the A6 and request that roll call again. I believe we had put that on earlier, so thank you, Mr. Gotcha. Chair.
All right. Seeing no further member questions, Mr. Brinks, please take the roll on the A6 amendment.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Yes.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Drozdowski.
Aye.
Drozdowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
No.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, no.
Cleburne votes nay. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, nay.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pawlowski is excused. Representative Quam is excused. Chair, with a vote of 4 ayes, 7 nays, and 2 excused, the motion does not prevail.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Brinks. With a vote of 4 ayes, 7 nays, the A6 amendment does not prevail and is not adopted. Representative Nash, you got the A7, so you're still up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move adoption of the A7 and request a roll call.
All right. Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A7 would put forward a form of voter ID here in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, I know that we talk about this pretty regularly, but I'm not sure that everybody understands just how prevalent voter ID is in many countries around the world. And I would say look to Europe as to a great model of a continent that is doing voter ID. There are literally dozens, tens of dozens of countries that are doing voter ID. And this is, again, a preventative measure, a proactive measure to make sure that we do not allow people who are not supposed to vote here. And the chair just referenced that he supports the idea of only allowing people who are actually citizens and able to vote to vote. So I think that this is a preventative measure that we would enact to make sure that only those who are supposed to vote have the ability to prove that they can vote. And understanding the criticism and concern of many that voter ID would require IDs for everybody who can vote, we would be happy to make sure that all people can get an ID. So once again, don't want to drag this on, but this is a very good measure that if you are interested in making sure that only those people who are supposed to vote are voting, then they should have the ability and should have no reservations in proving that they have the ability to vote, just like our friends in Europe. So once again, renewed adoption of the A7 and renew the roll call.
Yep. Okay. Member questions, comments?
Representative Kosnick has his hand up. It's hard to see in the light.
It's impossible to see. All right, Representative Kosnick, I'm sorry. It's really hard to see when you raise your hand because the light is just perfectly placed. Representative Kosnick.
Is that better?
That's better. Representative Kosnick.
I'm not fast enough to figure out how to change my hand back to yellow. But Representative Nash, thanks for bringing this amendment. I just have to share with the committee, you know, when I go throughout Lakeville and the areas around here, and even when I have done some tours in Minneapolis and other areas of the state, people have been, and we all know, people are so concerned, rightfully so, in Minnesota, and we know it nationally, with election integrity and calling into question the results of the last election for a variety of reasons. And this is, thank you, Representative Nash, for bringing this amendment, because I think it's one of a few different things that we can do. But voter ID is one of the ways that we as a committee, as a state legislature, can help instill, reinstill that integrity that everybody's vote counts and our elections are have the integrity and the sanctity of the vote that we need to reinstill in our constituency. It shouldn't be a partisan issue. If you don't feel that there was fraud or election in the last election, this is still a measure that you should support so that you know and your neighbors that might question some things that happened in the election, that they can feel, both sides can feel that there is more security, fairness, and integrity in our elections. And it's just something that if you're in touch with your constituents, in touch with Minnesotans, they're asking for this. And this is one of the smaller, or it's actually, whether it's one of the steps that we can take to make sure that our elections are secure and every vote counts. So I don't see it as a partisan thing, but I certainly hear it from our constituents, and I think they're right that it's a simple measure to make sure that our elections are free and that they're fair. And it doesn't encumber anybody. There's a responsibility that comes with exercising your right to vote and asking for a photo ID, just like when you get a driver's license, or excuse me, when you get a fishing license or a hunting license, and a variety of other things common in our society. The sanctity of voting, it's not an undue burden. And as Representative Nash has mentioned, many, many other states and countries do this. And I think the time has come to reinstill this in our elections, especially in light of the current debate around our election. So thank you, Representative Nash. I hope that we are successful in this amendment.
Okay. Next on my list, I have Representative Bonner.
Thank you for that. And I think we all agree that we want to ensure that there's fairness and security in our elections. I think we all appreciate that integrity. But what I want to say about this bill is that it provides one layer of protection, whereas we have proposals on the table that provide multiple levels of protection to do exactly that and ensure election integrity, such as automatic voter registration, which is sort of like multi-factor authentication that proves that you are who you say you are, you live where you say you live, and you are a legally eligible voter. So if you actually do support this type of measure, we should actually be looking at something like automatic voter registration, which provides multiple layers of security, and it does it at a fraction of the cost for our taxpayers.
Next on my list, I have Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually raised my hand a little bit tongue-in-cheek to Representative Nash. Talking about European IDs, I have two children who were born in Europe, and before they could leave the hospital, I had to have their little ID cards, and they were supposed to have these ID cards hung around their necks every time I took them out someplace. You know, they were legally within the country and still they were required to have this little card around their neck. I don't want the United States to go there. And so to require an ID for something as that we already check, we already verify, the systems are already in place, to me is like asking my children to wear this little card around their neck all the time. But I do want to say it's really important that we honor the work that our previous secretaries of state and our current secretary of state do every day to make sure that our elections in Minnesota are safe and valid and strong. We already have checks and balances in place, and the voters rejected voter ID in 2012, and we need to stand with what the voters want. Thank you.
Representative Nash, I know your Representative Claiborne didn't mention your name, but my last two speakers, I have Chair Nelson and then you. So if I can get Chair Nelson to make his comments, and then if you could wrap us up, is that sufficient, Representative Nash?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, great. Chair Nelson, please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As Representative Claiborne said, we had a vote on voter ID. We had a constitutional amendment that would have put voter ID in our constitution. that was overwhelmingly rejected by the voters of the state of Minnesota. They said they don't want that. They said it wasn't necessary. And so, therefore, I think this is unnecessary. And again, getting back to the bill, this is a technical bill, making minor tweaks and changes to election law to make these sections that they're listed here comply with language in other parts of the election law. This is a very substantive change. This is a very substantive amendment that goes well beyond a technical amendment. And therefore, I'm urging members to vote no on this amendment.
Representative Nash, if you want to close us out on the A7.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would say that I'm not advocating that the voter ID be hung around anyone's neck, so let's not conflate that with anything else. I don't believe that that is, or I would hope that one does not infer that I am trying to do that, because I'm not. I'm simply saying that when you go into a polling place, much like our friends in Europe, and I too was in Europe for a lengthy period of time, and I didn't see anybody feeling as if their vote was repressed. So I think that that's an important distinction to be making. And I do think that it seems that Representative Bonner might be in support of this, since she said that it's just another layer of something that we're adding into this. So thank you for your tacit support there. And once again, renew the move, motion for A7 to be adopted, and roll call requested.
Okay, Mr. Brinks, if you could please take the roll call.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Joskowski.
Aye.
Joskowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
No.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, no.
Cleborne votes nay. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, nay.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pawlowski is excused. Representative Quam is excused. Chair, with a vote of 4 ayes, 7 nays, and 2 excused, the motion does not fail.
All right, thank you, Mr. Brinks. With 4 ayes, 7 nays, the A7 amendment does not prevail and is not adopted. Members, the next amendment I have is the A8. It's a Quam amendment. Does another member want to present the A8? Representative New Brindley.
If you would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A8 amendment.
Wonderful. Please proceed with describing the A8 for the
committee. Yeah, and I apologize that I will not speak well to all of the technical language in the bill. However, I will say, you know, Representative Bonner just said that we have procedures in place to make sure you are who you say you are and you live where you say you live. This amendment would ensure that those processes are realized before ballots are commingled with all of the other ballots. Right now, of course, in the state of Minnesota, there is no verification process in place before a same-day registrant's ballot is commingled with all of the other ballots. This amendment would just ensure, as Representative Bonner said, that the procedures we have in place to make sure you are who you say you are and you live where you say you live, that those things are done before the ballots are commingled.
All right, member questions on the A8 amendment. Representative Nash.
Request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question on this, because I know that I was looking at the language, there's a lot to get through, but is this similar to the language that the Senate heard last year around provisional balloting?
So, Representative New Brindley, I know it's not your amendment.
I'm not familiar with the Senate language.
Okay. Representative Greenman, follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason I ask is because that policy, in addition to really putting real restrictions that would functionally eliminate SIMD registration. It also had a $7 million fiscal note. And I know that this is a committee that we hear a lot about cost. And so when we think about an amendment that we're bringing to a bill that is a very small modifications, and I don't even think has a fiscal note, the idea of attaching an amendment that is millions of dollars, and I think it was millions of dollars in the tails, seems like a bad idea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I'm sure we all feel, we oftentimes struggle with caring about what happens in the Senate. And I would simply say that this is an amendment that we have here in front of us today, would just say that let's vote for the House and disregard the Senate.
All right, Chair Nelson, comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I would urge a no vote on this. Again, this is provisional balloting, and I know Representative Quam is very passionate about provisional balloting, but Minnesota is one of three states that are not required under the Help America Vote Act to have provisional balloting, and because the people that register on Election Day can vote on Election Day. We heard a lot in this last election about vote dumps and data dumps and how things change. In our neighboring state of Wisconsin, that's one of the arguments that they're throwing around out there. This would create, if we didn't count the provision or the ballots of the people that register on Election Day and those who were run after, there would be a huge voter or Election Day or post-Election Day dump of data into it, causing questions of our election, questions of the integrity of our election, because that didn't come out on election night. Our citizens count on the day after the election knowing who's going to win and who won and who lost. And that's by putting provisional balloting in place, that would prohibit us from being able to have a tally after Election Day. Remember, again, this is a huge, huge change in our election law. It's not fitting with the technical nature of this bill. And therefore, members, I would urge a no vote on this amendment.
Okay, Representative New Brindley, closing comments on the AA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to address a few of the comments that were made. One, we are one of three states that are exempted from provisional balloting. I don't think that's something to be proud of. That means that we are one of three states that is not HAVA compliant, actually. All other 47 other states are required, if they have same-day registration, they are required to also have provisional balloting. This is not a good, safe anomaly that we have here in Minnesota. It's certainly nothing to tout as something to be proud of. I would also address the comment that was made that this functionally eliminates voter registrations. Well, only if they're not eligible voters. Those are the only voters that it would eliminate, is if they are ineligible voters. And this idea that there would be a post-election day dump that would create questions, I assure you that far more questions are created, as is evidenced by the OLA report from several years ago. The Office of the Legislative Auditor did find significant problems with our same-day voter registration system. Their recommendation was to make sure we got those fixed, and that has still not been done. I would encourage a yes vote on the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative New Brindley. I'm just going to assume you guys called a roll call on this one.
Representative okay. Nash did. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Just checking. Thank you. Mr. Briggs, will you please take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Joskowski.
Aye.
Joskowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes no.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
No.
Greenman votes nay. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, no.
Cleburne votes nay. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, no.
Mason votes nay. Representative New Brindley.
Yes.
New Brindley votes aye. Representative Pawlowski is excused. Representative Quam is excused. Chair, with a vote of 4 ayes, 7 nays, and 2 excused, the motion prevails. Does not prevail, excuse me.
All right, thank you, Mr. Brinks. With 4 ayes, 7 nays, the A8 amendment does not prevail and is not adopted. Next on our list is the A1. Representative New Brindley, you're back up again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. I just got an emergency phone call. But this just deletes the changes that were made in the bill to residency requirements. The bill changes the standard from resides to maintains residence. This is problematic, particularly here in Minnesota. We thrive on lake homes and cabins. And so we have thousands and thousands of Minnesotans who maintain residences other than their primary residence. So this language is really not a sufficient change. This is not a good idea in this technical bill, and I hope that we honor this. Certainly in this technical bill, the standard has always been that if the minority party disagrees with something, that will be pulled from the bill. I'm hoping that's why this amendment was left till last, because this one will be accepted as a reasonable change to the technical amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we want to move here quick. So Chair Nelson, comments?
Why don't you let Representative Nash go first?
Yeah, I just saw his hand come up as well. Thank you. Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a very reasonable request. I think this is something that can be viewed as nonpartisan and would request a roll call.
Okay, roll call haven't been requested. Back to you, Chair Nelson.
I'd like to call on Ms. Freeman from the Secretary of State's office. It's my understanding that they're trying to clean up and standardize the way it resides or maintains residence is throughout the rest of statute. Election statute. So I'd ask for Ms. Freeman to comment on this.
Very good. Ms. Freeman?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Statute 200.031 defines the determination of residence. And so this would be that someone maintains a residence. The residence, as it's defined in 200.031, is not that someone owns property within a state. There is much more to it. There's 13 points in there. And so this language is actually more clear. It also appears in several other parts of statute already that it is maintain residence. Statute relating to voter registration, statute relating to absentee voting, and other components. And so this is trying to create continuity throughout statute there. So that is the goal of the changes, not to protect a cabin owner or something like that. That would be explicitly someone who does not maintain residence as 200.031 would help someone determine where they should maintain their residence.
Okay.
Happy to answer follow-up questions from that.
Yes, thank you. Much appreciated. Stick around. Representative Kosnick, I see you got your hand up.
Thank you. I appreciate the explanation. I'm curious, how long has the difference in statutes been in existence, and so then why would we need to streamline it now? I just want to kind of clarify and understand the full impact of switching this, whether it doesn't, if it's been around for a long time and it's worked, I question why we need to do it now. Could maybe Mr. Gehring or staff shed some information on how long the difference of just resident or resided has been listed in statute?
Okay, let's see, question for staff. I don't know, Ms. Freeman, if you wanna try to answer that. I don't see Mr. Gehring.
He's on there.
Is he? Okay. Mr. Gehring, do you have any words of wisdom for us?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I think I would defer to Ms. Freeman. I don't off the top of my head know the history of that terminology.
Okay, well, that's a first.
Matt didn't have an answer for us. Ms. Freeman.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick. As I stated, just to clarify what I said previously, so residence is defined in statute, but reside is not defined in statute. And so these changes are coming out of conversations that we've had with Minnesota residents who spend time in other places throughout the year. However, they maintain their residence, and through the determination of residence statute, they are Minnesota residents. This would help clarify for them questions that are frequently asked in our office. I would need just a minute to go look at some of the history of the changes of when different language has come into play for those other statutes, but I can work on that and come back with hopefully a little bit of an answer on when that language was last changed.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Freeman. Representative Kosnick, any follow-up to that?
I'll look forward to some clarification, but I think Representative Newbrinley's amendment has a lot of merit. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Claiborne, I see you got your hand up.
Yeah, I'm just a little confused, and maybe Ms. Freeman can help me understand this. So it doesn't say that we're changing words. It says we're deleting sections. And so I'm confused as to whether we're just deleting sections or truly just changing a phrase.
Mr. Chair?
Chair Nelson.
Representative Claiborne, when you delete those sections, the only changes in those sections is changing the resides to maintains residence. And so by deleting those sections from the bill, it effectively leaves current law, the way the statute currently is in place. So that's what this amendment is doing, is deleting all those sections that are in the bill that are changing that word from resides to maintains residence.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that the public understood that. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that the public understands that as well, because sometimes when we do put these amendments forward, it is very confusing to the outside. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I see that I believe Representative Newbrinley has left the meeting. So if Representative Nash, if you want to give, I want to get back to Chair Nelson with his comments, and then Representative
Mr. Chair, just in the interest of brevity, renew the motion, ask for the roll call, and we can move on so we can hit our time out of here.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Nash. I appreciate it. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I urge a no vote on this amendment. I go back to my former mayor who purchased property in Maple Grove, that terrible city to the west of me, Brooklyn Park. Just kidding, Representative Bonner. But anyway, when he moved there, he maintained his residence in Brooklyn Park when he was mayor. And that would be our former Governor Ventura. He served as our mayor for 4 years in Brooklyn Park. And it was somebody challenged that he lived there. But that's where he claimed his residence was. That's where he got his mail. That's where everything was there. There is some question about whether he actually lived there full time or not, but that's where he maintained his residence. And the courts ruled that's where he claimed to maintain his residence, and he was getting mail there and all those other things that go around that was his residence. And therefore, he could run for re-election as mayor. He chose not to at the time. But again, there's court precedence on this of maintaining your residence there. Plus, a lot of our students that go away to college, they still maintain their residence at their home where they grew up till they're done with college and possibly move out and get a job and move away. But a lot of college students maintain their residence, even though they may not be spending much time or living there. So remember,
thank you, Chair Nelson. We've got a minute left, so.
That I urge a no vote.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Mr. Brinks, will you please take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson votes nay. Vice Chair Carlson.
No.
Carlson votes nay. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner votes nay. Representative Joskowski.
Aye.
Joskowski votes aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Elkins votes nay. Representative Greenman.
No.
Freeman votes nay. Representative Cleburne.
No.
Cleburne votes nay. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick votes aye. Representative Mason.
Mason, no.
Mason votes nay. Representative Newbrinley. Newbrinley is excused. Representative Pelosi is excused. Representative Quam is excused. Chair, with a vote of 3 ayes, 7 nays, and 3 excused, the motion does not prevail.
Mr. Briggs, can you give the vote total again, please?
3 ayes, 7 nays, 3 excused.
Thank you. Okay. And that was the A1 amendment? Yes. Okay. Sorry, I'm keeping track here. All right. Members with 3 ayes, 7 nays, the A1 amendment does not prevail and is not adopted. Chair Nelson, to your bill, to House file.
Mr. Chair, seeing as how it's 10 o'clock and we've got a time scheduled for tonight, we should come back, and if there's any more discussion on the bill, do that this evening. So we should recess now till the meeting tonight. And as he stated earlier in the session, the or beginning of the meeting, we come back tonight, half hour after session, that we should use the same check-in for the Zoom meeting.
Okay. So with that, members, we will recess to the call of the chair. And members, please keep this same Zoom link. We will use this same link when we reconvene.
And I'll call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee back to order. We recessed this morning. We're just about finished with one bill. We're going to finish that up after this one. And then we've got Representative Akam's bill, so House File 3084. And I'll move House File 3084 to be in front of us. The intent is to lay this over. I think we got the preliminary note on it this morning, but we'll lay it over, and then we'll go from there. So Representative Akam, you want to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 3084, and I do have an amendment.
I see there's a DE2 amendment. I'll move the DE2 amendment, and do you want to describe what the amendment does?
Right. The amendment is just a technical amendment, and it adds clarifying language.
Okay. So, members, the DE2 amendment's in front of us. Put the bill in the form that the author wants. Everybody wants to unmute. And all in favor of the DE2 amendment to put the bill in the way the author wants to present it, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. Representative Akam.
Well, thank you, committee. I appreciate the support on that. So House File 3084 is a bill to clarify and enhance the state building sustainability statutes. It is in an effort to improve the compliance with sustainability buildings 2030 requirements and makes state operations more cost effective. To do this, the bill does two things. First, it provides greater clarity for contractors by streamlining sustainable building and energy use statutes. And second, the bill also encourages renewable energy installation on state facilities by increasing the cap of renewable energy that can be generated on the state buildings. The energy would only be used for the designated facility and would not be sold back to the electric energy grid. This bill gives agencies and local bonding projects more options to meet the Sustainable Building 2030 standards. Constructing and remodeling buildings that are more efficient reduce energy costs and allows agencies to focus their appropriation on their core missions. And I do have one testifier. I'm hoping that he's here with us this evening. Wayne Wazlowski from the Department of Administration. Is he?
I have listed Ms. Roberts Davis and Wayne Wazlowski and Ann Hunt. Yes, Wayne Wazlowski is here. Mr. Wazlowski, if you want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thanks for sticking with us this morning and this evening.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Wayne Wazlowski. I'm the Senior Director for Real Estate and Construction Services for the Department of Administration. I want to thank Representative Akam for authoring House File 3084, which, as she indicated, is a technical amendment to clarify and enhance state building sustainability statutes. Major renovation and new construction projects funded with bond funds are required by statute to meet sustainable building 2030 energy standards. The current standard is an 80% reduction in energy use from a 2003 baseline building of the same type and location. In 2025, the standard increases to a 90% reduction. To meet the requirements, most projects will need to incorporate renewable energy systems into their projects in addition to energy efficiency methods and items. There are a number of different statutes that were added over time to encourage evaluation of certain renewable energy options as part of state building projects. These requirements are outdated and create confusion for design firms when determining the best options for incorporating renewable energy systems into building designs. Admin is proposing to simplify the statutory requirements to provide clarity and flexibility for design firms working on state-funded projects to evaluate a full range of renewable energy options to help determine the most cost-effective solution to move forward with when necessary to meet the sustainable 2030 standards. House File 3084 repeals two existing statutory provisions and clarifies and consolidates the requirements and options under a single statute, MS-16B-332. It moves away from having a predetermining the best solution to making available a full menu of options for design firms to evaluate. Thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present the proposal. I'm happy to stand for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Wasilowski. I see Ms. Byrell here. Is she here to answer questions or to give testimony in place of Ms. Roberts-Davis?
Mr. Chair, go ahead, Julie.
I'm just here to be helpful or answer questions. Commissioner Roberts-Davis was not able to join us, but Ann Hunt is here to answer questions as well.
Thank you. That's just wanted to double check because I didn't see the commissioner on the call. So okay, I guess then Ms. Hunt's here to answer questions. So members, any questions of the bill? Members, questions of the bill? I see no hands jumping up. Representative Akam, if you want to give a wrap-up, and we will then proceed to lay this over. And I will have Ms. Roberts, I see there's a preliminary note, and the note I have here is that the LBO hasn't signed off on the Department of Commerce's part. Ms. Roberts, can you explain what the fiscal note says that we have?
Mr. Chair, Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. I apologize, my video is not working right now. Yes, we have a fiscal note that is signed off by the LBO for the Department of Administration that's showing no fiscal cost for the department, and they should be able to explain it if there are any questions about that part. Department of Commerce has submitted their fiscal note showing no cost, but the LBO has not signed off on it, or they had not signed off on it this afternoon. Of course, Department of Commerce is not under this committee's jurisdiction.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Representative Akam.
Well, I just appreciate the committee's time tonight and appreciate your support for the bill.
Thank you. With that, members, we'll lay this over till we get the other note back and or the rest of the note back to be sure. And then we can decide we're going to move this on later on. Thank you, Representative Akam. Thanks.
Thank you.
Testifiers for showing up tonight. Members, I'm going to pass the baton or the gavel back over to represent our Vice Chair Carlson, and then we can go back to House File 4310.
Yes, House File 4310 back on the table. We are through all the amendments, members, so we are to the bill as it stands. Member questions? Comments? Okay. We had a very good discussion earlier today on the bill, so not surprised. Since it's been a little while, Chair Nelson, why don't you give us a kind of a brief overview and kind of wrap things up for us then?
I'll do my wrap up. And Mr. Members and Mr. Chair, this bill is the technical bill from the Secretary of State's office. It's basically the what was left over from the technical bill we did last year that came out of our committee that we couldn't get the Senate to agree upon. The pieces of this, like I said, we passed this out of committee last year. We passed it off the floor. And again, the pieces that were in the bill from last year that were agreed upon and became law were taken out of this. This is what was left. After in committee, we took out the parts that were objected to by either side. And so this is basically a very technical bill, changing some words here and there. And so members, so I ask for your support. And again, I believe the act, we're going to be laying this over also.
Right, yeah. I believe this bill will be laid over. So with that, members, House File 4310 is laid over. Chair Nelson, back to you.
Thank you, members. Thank you. And our next meeting is tomorrow morning. We have three bills up. The Stadium Reserve Account bill, the Representative Carlson's 4248, and then a bill for Hennepin County. And with that, members, that is the bill for, I jumped on to the next page, a fourth bill, 32485, Representative Stanstead. So members, with that, if there's no other questions, Representative Nash, you can go get something to eat. With that, members, we're adjourned.